day, you popcorn junkies and weekly rushers. The writer's strike, the actor's strike, Hollywood has ground to a halt. Things weren't that busy before the strikes, and now the strikes have happened. News flow is glacial. Now, the point of this chat is I want you to pop all of your thoughts below this recording. I want you to share in your thoughts. I want you to disagree. I want you to explain how... It's not about getting things right or getting things wrong, but I just want to share with you. I just want to touch base with movie fans, because I think we have just come off the back of a really, really significant moment. I personally think that July 21st, in terms of cinema, given the whole sort of Barbenheimer type thing and, you know, the whole kind of Barbie slash Oppenheimer kind of frenzy of excitement, I think we've actually just passed or just had a day and a moment that's going to go down in cinematic, certainly box office history. And these moments are rare. I mean, I remember them, you know, in 1970. They used to happen a lot around Spielberg films, around the original idea of the blockbuster, the idea that the crowd queuing or waiting to see a film reached round the block, literally. So I'm asking this question, given we've had such a seismic moment where Barbie and Oppenheimer, you know, the yin and the yang, the pink and the black, if you like, the dark and the light, the fuzzy, the frilly and silly, the dark, despairing and depressed, the happy, the sad. You know, we've had the opposite ends of the genre spectrum. We've had opposite ends of... this is what I'm going to get to. We feel we have had opposite ends of the genre spectrum. But in matter of fact, I'm going to explain how there's great crossover in what's actually happened and worked with both these films for very different audiences, but have still kind of achieved the same thing, and thus together have caused, and quite literally, a pink mushroom cloud of both financial and critical just... astonishment throughout the world. It's been an awakening. It's been a moment. It's been seismic in every way. And I'm asking the question: Could the double knockout punch of Barbie and Oppenheimer be the beginning of the end, if you like, for superhero and franchise films? But you know, specifically, I'm thinking films like the Marvel Cinematic Universe, DC, Star Wars. You know, all that kind of stuff. And yeah, you know, around the sides of that, things like Mission Impossible, you know, Fast and the Furious, all those kind of franchise IPs. IP means intellectual property. And you know, there's a weird kind of symbiotic relationship, isn't there, when you're a film lover. On the one hand, you've got the commercial releases, and then you've got the indie stuff, and lots of people are into the indie sector or independent filmmaking are very sort of like po-faced about the mainstream. I do see cinema as one enormous church which sort of embraces an enormous congregation of different types of content, if you like. And I think, you know, the multiplex and the studios, they deliver a much needed part of the movie world market, as do all of the indie stuff and all the kind of cult stuff and all of the kind of unexpected hits and all that kind of malarkey. So what do you think? Do you think the double punch, are we at a moment, are we at an inflection point where, you know, the Barbie and Oppenheimer moment is telling us something? Should we stop and take stock, and should we listen, and should we think, should Hollywood think, should, you know, audience goers think, should people who nail their colours to just one mast, you know, the Marvel Cinematic Universe fan, which if you go back 3 or 4 years, we would have clearly identified ourselves as such. We realised the naivety of our ways back there. We were silly. We were naive. We were innocent. We were wet behind the ears. We were franchise virgins, if you like. We were just excited by Marvel, because at the time, Marvel were exciting. DC films as well. You know, we've got the whole DC thing too. So we've had two blockbuster wallops. But let's look at the numbers. Let's look at the money that they've made. Barbie, obviously, is the massive, massive commercial success. Barbie is looking at the end of its first week, coming into its second weekend. It's looking to have taken around $260 million just in the US box office, and over $500 million already globally. That's a lot. It's going to be a $1 billion grossing film for sure. It's just a matter of how much over that $1 billion mark is it going to make globally. Oppenheimer, only to be expected. It was a much more esoteric watch. It was about an hour longer than Barbie. It was about a very serious, politically motivated subject. I mean, even for me watching it, check out our review, I found it almost not too serious, because that's the story, but I found it a bit slow, let's put it that way. Oppenheimer ends its first week with almost half the amount of Barbie, with $127 million, which is great for a Nolan film, and with a $265 million global haul at the end of the first week. So the two films have generated almost $1 billion between them already, and they certainly will have done by the end of this weekend. That's a massive deal. That's a massive thing. So what happens at a moment like this? Of course, Greta Gerwig, you know, a sort of indie darling. She made Lady Bird. She made Little Women. She was the star of Frances Ha. Her partner and co-writer of Barbie, Noah Baumbach. You know, he's made lots of American indie films too. You know, low budget, reasonably budget American indie films. So indie. Christopher Nolan, he's a curious character, Christopher Nolan, because he's done a lot of tentpole franchisey kind of stuff, lots of superhero stuff, Batman, you know, The Dark Knight, all that kind of stuff. And he's done films with Leonardo DiCaprio, so he gets big casts, big stars and what have you, star in his films. And so in a weird way, he is a box office draw, but I would call him sort of mainstream intelligent. He's a cerebral filmmaker. He's a filmmaker's filmmaker. He relishes the process of filming on film, you know, and he respects and loves and indulges the viewer in a filmic fashion. Though, once again, I would say that I didn't necessarily think Oppenheimer, beyond the obvious scenes around the bomb, actually did much of that itself. So you've got two artists, film artists, Greta Gerwig and Christopher Nolan. And so you've got this curious situation where we've had one of the, I think it was the fourth highest grossing box office weekend in history. So we've had the fourth most successful commercial weekend at the box office in history. And both those films at the top of the pile were made by essentially independent, spirited filmmakers, which is curious, isn't it? That is a curious thing. Where next? Why has that happened? How has this happened? Well, you can't look at the Barbenheimer sort of phenomenon without looking at the press machine, the publicity machine. Social media has been harnessed in a massive way. We got excited. And to be honest with you, I was sort of incredibly, the jury was out with me on all the trailers for Barbie. I was dead set on Oppenheimer. And it was only, it was about a week, 10 days before the films were released, that I really got a sense of, wow, this machine, this publicity machine is really generating excitement. And I thought it was really to be relished, regardless of whether I was going to like Barbie or not. I thought anything that's driving people to go and see double bills, which is great, has got to be a good thing. Critical success. Let's look at the critical success. Barbie, Rotten Tomatoes. It was around 94% towards the end of last week. It's dropped. It's now 89%, Barbie on Rotten Tomatoes. Oppenheimer is sitting at 94% on Rotten Tomatoes. And their audience scores are around the same. Barbie, 86%. Oppenheimer, 92%. So they've gone down well with the critics, they've gone down well with the viewers, the audience, and they've clearly gone down well in terms of how much money everyone's willing to spend in going to see them. So what does this mean? What does this tell us? What should we read into this? Are we looking at a moment? Well, the biggest fear I've got coming out of this is that we are now going to be faced with what looks like an exploitation of the Barbie intellectual property. Let's not forget Mattel, one of the biggest toys manufacturers in the world, in history, were behind Barbie. And it was a stroke of corporate genius. They threw themselves under the bus. They took a critical stance on themselves. It was incredibly meta. They owned their mistakes. They owned their oversights. They owned the inherent contradictions of making Barbie somehow a sort of feminist empowering figure, when for many years she was seen as the sort of benchmark that created a huge pressure for women and girls alike. But the IP, the intellectual property of Barbie, now looks like it's going to be exploited for potential sequels. There's already in chats with Greta Gerwig, will there be sequels? The head of Mattel said, well, when you have this much success, there has to be a sequel of some form. Well, beyond that, we're even looking at Mattel are talking about there being the Mattel Cinematic Universe. Can you believe it's actually going to have the acronym MCU, like the Marvel Cinematic Universe, Mattel Cinematic Universe. And this is really worrying, because I think once again this shows corporate business and Hollywood not understanding at all how to do the very thing they want to do, which is make lots of money. But because they're drawn to systematizing it and structurally just repeating making everything formulaic, we get that. That's what Hollywood does, of course. That's why you get genre films. You wouldn't have genre films if Hollywood didn't know how to make lots of money delivering on a, you know, it's like, why do I always want to get a Wagamama's? Because I like the chicken catsuit. And Nadia says, try something else. I go, no, I don't want to try something else. I want the chicken catsuit. It's the same idea. I want to watch the next thriller. I want to watch the next Mission Impossible. Or I want to watch the next Star Wars films because I like my chicken catsuit. Kind of, do you get what I mean? I think what is missing in all of this, though, is an ability to remember that one of the biggest driving forces behind Barbie's success, for me, and I think generally for the nation and the world, was this simple question. How was she, the director, or how was it, Margot Robbie, how was the film going to do it? What was it going to do? Where was the twist? Where was the other message going to be? How was it going to take something like Barbie and give us something that would wrong-foot us or surprise us and entertain us and excite us and make us think. And I think that is the key to what made Barbie a success. And in a sense, is what's gonna make more and more people go back to the cinema to watch it again, to interrogate all of those things even further. I wanna see again, how did she do that? I was kind of curious. I mean, because that's all I've done ever since I've seen it, is I keep thinking, well, how did she pull that off? And actually, did I feel that? And did I think that? And actually, did that work as well as I thought it did? And actually, was it right that Ryan Gosling seemed to get all of the best lines and did it? All that sort of stuff is going on. It also taps into an incredibly febrile cultural sense of men, women, toxic masculinity, etc., etc. But I think what's been forgotten here is the fundamentals here were, we were wondering, how is this director and how is this actress, Margot Robbie, because she's a producer, how are they gonna interrogate this? How are they gonna approach this? How are they gonna twist it and turn it on its head and all that kind of stuff? So there was a huge curiosity factor, I think, to much of the box office interest that's still continuing. And weirdly, there's always that with a Christopher Nolan film. So you have that, and that's where I think there are similarities with the two. Everyone's wondering, how's Chris Nolan going to do this? And the atomic bomb, the nuclear bomb, think about it. In a weird way, whilst toxic masculinity and gender politics are threaded through everything at the moment, since the pandemic, so too has been the spectre, if you like, of nuclear war, you know, Armageddon. And so we've got almost in Oppenheimer, you've got the origin story of this modern kind of conflict or sense, even if you're not into politics, that we're living under this. But we did certainly for a while live under this threat that Putin could nuke us all at any minute. And so that, you know, there was a sort of both film subjects kind of had touched everyone's lives. Everyone's lives touched those subjects in some way. Ironically, you know, even our kids now live in a sort of nuclear aware way, in much the same way that we all did in the sort of 70s and early 80s. And yet the other thing that's important to remember about both these films, which I think Hollywood are going to struggle if they try to turn this into a formula and, like Willy Wonka, create a factory that can then produce the same DNA for the same films time and time again, because I just don't see how it's going to work. Barbie only happened after like 14 years of many iterations, different studios. Sony had it, and then they lost it. I think Lena Dunham was attached to one, then she lost it. I can't remember who was, because someone else was cast, was it? Anne Hathaway was cast at one point, and then she wasn't. And so Margot Robbie and Greta Gerwig really pushed and dug their heels in to make this film the way they wanted to make it. And I do know that there were some quite strong editorial disagreements, which they ironed out, and it came out in the wash, if you like. But I know that it wasn't an easy journey. But it required some very strong directorial pushing and trust and energy to get Barbie made. And the same thing you could argue is always the case with a Chris Nolan film. His budgets are less, yes, but there's that same sort of, you know, he's an artist, he's an auteur, he pushes, he's not going to negotiate, he's not going to compromise. And really, studios are kind of taking on a Christopher Nolan film because it's a Christopher Nolan film and it makes us look good and we're really cool and all that kind of stuff. So what I'm saying is, you can't ignore the fact that really what makes this moment in box office cinema history, if you like, which it is a moment, I think we are in a moment, it's about the directors, it's about the talent at the helms, it's about the directors, very much about the directors in both these films. Of course, you've got two sensationally, or three with Ryan Gosling, four with, you know, you've got hundreds of great performances, but Cillian Murphy is very much associated with Oppenheimer, Margot Robbie, Ryan Gosling very much with Barbie, and you've got, you know, three incredibly strong performances too, absolutely. But behind them, you've got some real kind of quality chops making them. Which leads me to a quick reference out to, so what is going wrong for all these other films like Marvel or other franchises and intellectual properties like Marvel and DC? And, you know, Fast and the Furious I saw recently, what a load of old rubbish it was. It was just atrocious. It was so formulaic that you felt AI had made it. And this seems a great shame because, of course, there was a moment only four years ago that Avengers Endgame came out. And that was, in a way, that was the last tentpole moment. That was the last sort of box office hurrah moment. A little bit like when The Force Awakens, you know, the first renewed Star Wars reboot came out. That was another moment, much in the way that it absolutely wasn't with Indiana Jones. And we're just beginning to see a rule or a law of ever diminishing returns, I think, in a realm, the superhero film, which up until now, could be relied on to deliver. And yet, here's the thing. If what Mattel, the producers or the makers of Barbie, if what their plans are, or they're suggesting their plans are for real and are to be taken at face value, we're about to just watch the start of the same self-harm to their intellectual properties as we've seen with Marvel. Marvel have has spread the Marvel jam on too much toast. It's been spread so thinly that series are coming at you all the time on Disney Plus. The new movies coming through feel like they've been made for the small screen in Disney Plus. You know, we're looking at what we're looking at coming out. The Marvels. Sorry, watch the trailer. It's only diehard Marvel fans who are never going to lose interest in the characters that are being presented to them that are going to stay attached to this stuff. There has to be something that pulls in the film lover or the story lover beyond the rules and regulations of, you know, this cycle of films or this group of, you know, was it stage four or stage three? You know, how does that fit in? There's too much complexity in all of that. So you can't go and watch a film and just sit down, sort of belt up and just watch the film. It's all about where does this slot within a much broader universe? And that becomes sometimes really alienating. I like that stuff and I find it alienating and antagonizing. And it's not what good filmmaking is about. It's about good universe building, which is what's in the same problems happening for Star Wars. You know, it's become bogged down in breathing life into really thin, small little suburbs of the central core tenets of the Star Wars world. And it tries to make that work. And it has, you know, varying successes. For example, there's a new Lando series, Lando Calrissian, you know, being made by Donald Glover, Childish Gambino. Under normal circumstances, I'd be really excited about that. But I just think, it's just going to be like the others. He's going to be flying spaceships and wandering through sand. It seems to be all that happens in all of them. Secret Invasion has just come to a halt, a new, you know, new Marvel DC series on Disney Plus. Combined budget for Secret Invasion was $212 million, right, for the series. That's more than the combined budgets of Barbie and Oppenheimer. And it looks, just from what I've seen, I saw one commentator said there was a bomb attack that was supposed to be set in Moscow and they'd shot it in Huddersfield. And it looked like Huddersfield. And you're absolutely right. I watched the first 20 minutes of Secret Invasion whilst I was on holiday. And I turned it off because it was so spectacularly predictable and bad. It was just boring. Indiana Jones. I'm a huge fan of Indiana Jones. I'm jumping all over the place. What I'm saying is lots of money is being thrown at intellectual properties without any real regard for how they should creatively treat that matter or treat that subject matter. You know, we started well in so many instances. The Force Awakens was good. Even on the Disney Plus stuff with the Marvel series, WandaVision was excellent. Excellent. And for me, it's just been downhill ever since Moon Knight. I didn't get on board with Loki. I know lots of people did. Maybe it was a bit better than the others, but didn't do it for me. Falcon and the Winter Soldier, Moon Knight, Miss Marvel. We found a few moments of fun in the writing of She-Hulk. Lost interest. Nothing. And of course, it dilutes the specialness. It dilutes the event. It dilutes the creative process. It feels like Marvel is literally flying itself into a wall or a high rise or something, into a planet. And absolutely no one seems in any way interested to sort of take their foot off the pedal. DC Films is no different. You know, Joker was an exception. And again, Joker had that thing. Todd Phillips, not an art house filmmaker, but they took someone who wasn't associated with the kind of, you know, almost the clique, if you like, of superhero-ness. They threw him at it. He brought something out that was different. Critically, wasn't massively well received. Rotten Tomatoes, very low. Critics weren't a great fan. Felt it was too derivative, too like Martin Scorsese, all this kind of stuff. I loved it. I thought it was brilliant. Held together. But what did they do that was different? They had Joaquin Phoenix in there, giving us a completely sort of nuanced, layered, complex performance. And, you know, whether you agree or not, you've also got a film that has a more indie sensibility in the way that it's executed. The Batman stepped in the right direction. But even in DC land, you can feel that they're sort of, the Penguin is now a series. It looks good, you know, got Colin Farrell, fantastic. But are we looking at the danger signs of DC doing the same thing as Marvel, which is let's skin this into a million and one series? We're looking at both the impenetrable rules of these franchises, the history, the connections, the multiverses, sloppy storytelling, using portals and timelines and all this kind of stuff as means and ways to have 18 iterations of the same character. The sanctity of storytelling has kind of been lost. You know, and I think what we had in this weekend on July the 21st were two really robust and original films. But I think the danger with the originality surrounding the originality of the Barbie film is Mattel and Hollywood in general need to just check themselves before they step forward and press the green button on what I'm about to read to you, which is being dubbed as the Mattel Cinematic Universe, because Barbie is Barbie because it has an indie director at its helm doing something very different with it. If you try and turn this now into a cinematic universe that can have lots and lots of iterations, you are going to run the same risk of running it into the ground. And it seems that Hollywood is just designed to do this. Check these other possible little kind of IPs within the Mattel cinematic universe. And am I right in thinking I think Dungeons and Dragons came from Mattel too? So we've got Barney, yes, the purple dinosaur. Daniel Kaluuya is producing. Don't think he's directing. He could be in it. It's being described as a surrealistic think piece. Barney, what was his line? I love you, you love me, let's go together in harmony. I mean, unless it involves drug taking, I don't see how that's going to work. Polly Pocket, another little doll, very different to Barbie, very small. Lily Collins, Emily in Paris star, she's attached to star in the Polly Pocket film. HBO's or frontwoman of Girls, the series Girls, Lena Dunham, set to direct. Perhaps that's a little bit of a, sorry it didn't work out with Barbie. Hot Wheels, J.J. Abrams, his production company, they're going to be doing Hot Wheels. How's that going to be different to, say, Pixar's Cars or the Fast and the Furious? What are they going to do to market as different? What can a new, how can you invest different, a different kind of feel into a car series, Hot Wheels? And same with Matchbox. They're also looking to exploit Matchbox. You've got Major Matt Mason, which apparently was a character, a Mattel astronaut action figure from the 1960s who lives and works on the moon. This is one of those ones that sounds kind of, it could be good. They've got Tom Hanks to star as this guy. Masters of the Universe. I think now with Dungeons and Dragons not really doing its thing, could Masters of the Universe, Netflix dropped it. They didn't want to pursue Masters of the Universe. So Mattel are now trying to get someone else to pick that up. You know, He-Man, Skeletor, you know, could that work? Viewmaster, do you remember the little 3D thing where you put your slide thing and you move it around and watch things? They're talking about turning that into some kind of movie or content of some form. I mean, like someone suggested, if it was a horror film, maybe. Is it going to be VR? Is it going to be some kind of twist on VR? But, you know, Viewmaster, that red, I've got one down there, the red thing where you go and a little photograph comes around. They were brilliant. They were brilliant. Uno, the card game. Uno, the card game. What? I don't see how these can work. It's all about directorial talent, authorial voice, experimental approach. This weekend just gone worked for two reasons. It was a brilliant chaining and fusing of the publicity machine behind two films, seeking an opportunity, scheduling. It was a clever bit of scheduling, if you like, by quite boldly putting two completely, you know, opposite films together and letting them run against each other and letting them run with each other. And that was clever. So clever programming, clever scheduling, clever publicity, but fundamentally at the heart of it, clever directors, clever actors, and whether you like them totally or not, and I wasn't too much of a fan of Oppenheimer, and I had criticisms of Barbie, you know, relatively speaking, clever scripts and some clever ideas. But you can't turn that into a formula. And, you know, I would argue that, in fact, some of the best superhero films have those, you know, have those aspects to them and elements to them. You know, they've got to get back to personality. They've got to get back to people. You can have big blowing up stuff and all that kind of stuff. But I think we have to get away from being slavishly locked in. And I think what's happened at Marvel is quite literally the tail is wagging the dog. They're locked into such a complicated roadmap for the future that they have got no wriggle room to get out of it. They can't escape their own self-enforced multiverse of madness. They've entered Marvel has entered its own multiverse of madness. Meanwhile, on the sidelines, you've got sort of companies like Pixar. Okay, it's not a franchise, but you know, there was always that idea that a Pixar film would deliver something new. It's not doing it anymore. It's just not delivering newness or freshness or great ideas or cleverness, you know, because they're putting too much of the bloody stuff out. I'm not too sure whether this does mark a new moment in cinema and filmmaking, because what it would need to mark is senior executives not suddenly going, let's turn everything else in our library of kind of IP and intellectual property, let's turn every toy we've got, like we've turned every superhero we've got, the weirdest, into a film or a series. But the weirdest thing, and this is where I'm going to end my rant, the weirdest thing about even the superhero stuff is they haven't even gone for the most obviously brilliant superheroes. I mean, there's things like Swamp Thing, there are so many other characters. They've gone for these odd, really odd, sort of not even eccentric, but boring characters. I'm sorry, don't get me started on Eternals. It just, what? Come on. Give us something challenging and thoughtful. You know, and also the audience, as we can see with these two films, can cope with savvy, with clever. You know, Guardians of the Galaxy, yet again, the third one, you could argue it's not the best of the three, but it did much better than it was expected to do at the box office. And that's because actually it delivered on its promise of clever, funny, rule-breaking, sort of, you know, slightly kind of unconventional, experimental in its humour. That's what the audience wants. But I was sitting there thinking, oh, Barbenheimer, this is the moment where it's all going to change and we could have more moments like this. And then looking at Mattel's announcements, looking at the way Marvel just refuses to change its course, though Bob Iger at Disney says, we're not going to clear as much, we're not going to commission as much. Well, if you don't commission as much, what the hell are you going to be putting out? Because you ain't got any actors and you ain't got any writers at the moment. So what do you think, guys? I don't know whether to be optimistic or despairing, because I think we had a glimpse, and I think this weekend's given us a pink, mushroom-clouded glimpse of what could be the best of Hollywood and indie talent brought together. And my worry is it might not happen again like that for quite some time.